Tech News Briefing is supported by FTI Consulting. From the world's largest cyber breaches to global fraud investigations, FTI Consulting is the number one expert-based firm organizations turn to in their moments of truth. Learn more at FTIconsulting.com.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Friday, June 16th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Uber has invested billions of dollars in its global expansion plans, and the company has expressed a goal of having all the world's taxis listed on its app by 2025. But a rival in Japan is throwing off those ambitions, and the strategies he's used to slow Uber's growth there could be mirrored by other local taxi operators to upset the ride-hailing giant's international goals. Our Tokyo-based reporter River Davis is going to join us with more on this. But first, a group of music publishers representing songwriters from Taylor Swift to Beyoncé to the Rolling Stones are suing Twitter for alleged copyright infringement. Users regularly tweet videos that include popular music, and artists want to be paid for their work when it's used in this way. Our Twitter reporter Alexa Kors joins us. Alexa, tell us more about why these music publishers brought this suit.
Well, Twitter doesn't have one of these licensing agreements that would govern how music is used on the service and would create arrangements to pay artists when users post videos that include their songs. And that's unusual because we know that YouTube, Facebook, Snap, TikTok, those platforms have worked out these agreements.
So this group, the National Music Publishers Association, what outcome are they looking for?
They're seeking damages of more than $250 million for what they say are hundreds of thousands of alleged infringements they've identified.
Just how long have these alleged infringements been going on, according to the music publishers?
This has been an issue for a while. This has been an issue, you know, well before Elon Musk entered the picture last year when he acquired Twitter. And the lawsuit says that before and after the acquisition, Twitter, they allege, engaged in and profited from copyright infringement.
Alexa, have we seen any cases like this before?
Yeah, actually, this same association in 2019 sued Peloton for copyright infringement. And in that case, they were seeking more than $300 million in damages. That case was settled in 2020 with a new licensing agreement between the parties.
How significant could this case end up being?
This could be a big battle. You're seeing music's biggest rights holders going after Twitter. And we also know some history here. We know that Musk himself has a track record of not wanting to back down in legal disputes. He's shown a willingness before to go to trial where others might settle. This is just the very beginning here.
All right, that's our Twitter reporter, Alexa Kors. Twitter did not respond to a request for comment. Several U.S. government agencies have been hacked, officials said yesterday. The cyber attack exploited a software bug that had already compromised major businesses in the UK, including British Airways and the BBC. The scope and severity of the hack hasn't been determined, but a senior official at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency confirmed that multiple federal agencies were affected. A number of U.S. states and universities also said they had been compromised and are seeking to understand the extent of their exposure. Uber users will soon see full-length video ads in the company's apps. Ad sales are a key part of Uber's growth strategy, according to the company's CEO. He told analysts earlier this year that the company's active advertiser base had grown by 80% year over year. The video ads in the ride-hailing app will play while users wait for drivers and during trips. For Uber Eats, they'll play after customers place orders and continue until the deliveries arrive. And on Drizly, its alcohol sales platform, the ads will run in search results. The general manager of Uber's advertising division said one key selling point will be the company's ability to target users based on their travel and purchase histories. Okay, from one new attempt to a years-long grind. Uber struggles to make inroads in Japan's taxi market. We'll tell you why a battle with someone dubbed the country's taxi prince may be to blame. That's after this short break.
Tech News Briefing is supported by FTI Consulting. From the world's largest cyber breaches to global fraud investigations, FTI Consulting is the number one expert-based firm organizations turn to in their moments of truth. Learn more at FTIconsulting.com.
Uber has been outmaneuvered in one of the world's largest taxi markets by the man known as Japan's Taxi Prince. Now, Uber's international reach has long been considered a competitive advantage over its more US-focused rival Lyft. But the efforts of this so-called ride-hail royalty are painting a bit of a roadmap for how local operators can derail those overseas ambitions. Here to discuss this is our Tokyo Bureau reporter, River Davis. River, can you tell us a little bit more about who Japan's Taxi Prince is?
Yeah, so Ichiro Kawanabe is a really interesting character. He is the third generation of basically the family that has owned Japan's biggest taxi company. It's existed for almost a century here. And on top of that, he's also the chairman of Japan's Taxi Federation. He's the head of Tokyo's Taxi Association. And he created this app called Go, which is now the biggest taxi hailing app in the country. So he has kind of immense sway within the taxi industry in Japan. He's also married to the granddaughter of a former prime minister, which means he's brother-in-law with some notable politicians here in Japan as well. So he's immensely connected in the business world and the political world here, hence the name the Taxi Prince.
Okay, so quite a title that he's got. What steps has he taken to block Uber and its growth in Japan?
So speaking to people that have worked with Kawanabe for years, they say that essentially he was watching Uber's rise in the US and feeling quite intimidated. He doesn't want to see Japan's taxi industry, which his family has looked over for decades, be disrupted by this foreign player that is seeking to upend the taxi industry. So he had time to prepare, and he really worked on lobbying with Japan, working with regulators here to make sure that Uber's model of using private drivers was not legalized in Japan. So today, it's still the case that for you to provide transport services, you have to have a taxi license, which means that Uber can't implement its disruptive model here.
You mentioned the app Go that he created. You know, in other markets, taxi rivals that have tried to create apps that challenge Uber haven't had as much success. So what has made Go so popular?
Kawanabe, as I mentioned before, is very well connected within the taxi industry in Japan. And so we've heard several instances of him actually approaching rival taxi companies and saying, look, you probably shouldn't partner with Uber, you should partner with Go. In one kind of notable scenario, one of the largest taxi companies here in Tokyo, a company called Hinomaru, the CEO of that company was drawn into this room with Kawanabe, the Taxi Prince, and told either you need to cancel your partnership with Uber or you're going to lose your position in this federation that Kawanabe runs. So there's been some kind of back-end pressure, definitely, from the Taxi Prince. But in general, the company has done pretty well in advertising. And of course, it's partnered with Kawanabe's own taxi company, which is the largest taxi company in Japan. So that's been a boost for it as well.
Can you tell us a little bit about Uber's presence in Japan? You know, when did it get there and what has its trajectory been like?
Uber has had a tough time taking off in Japan. The taxi industry here, I would say, is insulated. It's different from taxis you see in other markets. The drivers wear white gloves, everything is manicured. Drivers even have manuals here on the etiquette with which to use when they are speaking with customers. You know, talk a little bit, but not too much. It's a very kind of interesting culture. And so Uber has had a difficult time breaking into that culture. It came in, you know, around 2014 saying that it wants to disrupt Japan's taxi industry, change the regulations so that it can have private drivers drive customers around. And that really ruffled feathers in the taxi industry and with regulators here. And so in 2018, it didn't have much success with its kind of lobbying efforts here. So it began to pivot and say that, okay, now we're going to turn around and work with taxi companies. And it's kind of struggled to make friends now Go currently grabs about 70% of the mobile ride hailing market here, and Uber doesn't disclose what share it has in Japan, but that remaining roughly third is split between Uber and a couple other rivals here, so that gives us a sense of how well it's doing today.
And what has Uber said about the rivalry in Japan?
Uber has said that it welcomes the competition. Its mobility head said that this type of battle with Go inspires innovation, and that it's continuing to invest and grow in Japan, which is true. Uber is popular, especially with tourists visiting Japan, and the country actually reopened its borders for the first time in 3 years last fall, so it's had a big influx in tourism. And that's been a boost for Uber. So in April, its sales were up 5 times, for example, compared to pre-COVID the same month.
Has this kind of success at blocking Uber's growth been managed in other countries?
Uber has had a really strong growth trajectory in regions like Latin America and parts of Europe. It's had a tougher time in Asia in general, I would say. It lost out to local players in China and Southeast Asia in recent years. And a case that closely models Japan, actually, is in South Korea. So there was the rise of a local app in that country, basically similar to Go. It was able to grow off of these ties it had with the taxi industry and also the lobbying that it did with regulators to make sure that Uber could only operate its business as an app that lists taxis.
All right, that's our reporter, River Davis. And that's it for Tech News Briefing this week. A quick programming note, we'll be off on Monday in honor of Juneteenth, but we'll be back on Tuesday. TNB's producer is Julie Chang, our supervising producer is Melanie Roy, and our executive producer is Chris Sinsley. I'm your host, Zoe Thomas. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.